Dave Wunstead hanging out with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Always a delight to have Coach Wunstead here with us. So, Dave, help us with a discussion we were having earlier. You know, we all saw what happened to Aiden Hutchinson. He's out. And then you look at, well, then who's the defensive player of the year? And we were talking about different guys on the Bears. And it would seem that Montez Sweat is not putting up the numbers that would get him any kind of consideration. And maybe quietly, Jalen Johnson is emerging as the best defensive player on the Bears, because the opponent's quarterback rating against is something like 20.8 against him. Now, they're not going to challenge him a ton. He's not going to be able to get a ton of picks. He's not going to be able to make a ton of wow plays because they've got an injury on the other side. And so, not surprisingly, opponents will go after the backup who is starting opposite him. I'm just curious, have you noticed him in his development? Is he getting better as a player? And can you tell? Because it seems like they're going after other players.
Yeah, I'm going to assume, that Jalen is. But, you know, I don't know if guys vote for that because of what Pro Football Focus or somebody else says. You know, I think they're looking for numbers. You know, they're looking for sacks. They're looking for tackles for loss. They're looking for interceptions. They're looking at passes defended. And so I think in Jalen and Montez's standpoint, we know what they bring to the table for the Bears. And, you know, that's all they can control. That's all they can control. Go out every week and play at the highest level you can play at. And if the numbers come your way, fine. If they don't, and you're helping the team win and be one of the best defenses. Now, that is a fact that if you're playing on a top five, top 10 defense, that
people will look at
that. That gets their attention, you know.
You could identify a lot of different players for having in the midst of really strong seasons. Kyler Gordon is another one. And I wonder what you thought. His injury could be a factor if he misses any time. He was in the midst of having a terrific game.
Yeah.
And Dave, how they use him, how they deploy him, how often do they disguise where he is? Because he seems to be right place, right time. And also when he blitzes, it seems to be catching the opposing quarterback off guard more often than not. How do you explain the way that they're using him in the variety of ways?
Well, you know, the first play of the game, right? When he makes a tackle for loss on a running play, it's, I don't want to say unusual, but it is somewhat unusual. Usually your nickel blitzes, and he's the nickel guy. He's generally, if they put three wide receivers in the game, he's the guy that lines up on that third receiver type. Now, depending on the formation, if they want to use him when there's two backs and a tight end, then he would line up to the weak side, away from the tight end, okay, and Edmonds and Edwards. So they, depending on the formation and the people that the offense uses, if they want Gordon in the game, they can line him up different spots. Now, the one thing that is a little bit unusual from their first question, David, is he makes the tackle on the running play. To run nickel blitzes against the run in a run situation is somewhat unusual. And I'm going to give Eric Washington, the coordinator, and give Flus credit that they obviously had a real good tendency. When they line up, you know, in this area, they could have called it, or it could have just been a sight blitz. We would have those. Hey, if they line up with that back offset one way or another, you blitz.
Yeah.
It's about 80% that they're going to run the ball weak side. So Gordon's experienced enough that he can do those things. And it is unusual that on first down, you're bringing your nickel back and he makes a tackle for loss. I mean, that's great X and O information coming from the coaches to the players.
Dave, you've often talked about closers and who are the closers. The closers are the corners. The closers are the pass rushers. Obviously, both are very valuable positions in the NFL. Is pass rusher the most valuable, just given the amount of money those guys make, versus corners who still get paid a lot of dough? I'm just curious, if you had your preference, which would you have to take?
Yeah, on defense, definitely a pass rusher, just because if the quarterback doesn't feel threatened, when I say threatened, feel like every time he drops back, he's going to get hit in the mouth, then this, I don't, the NFL quarterbacks are too good. They're going to pick you apart.
Right.
So they got to have that in the back of their mind. I've got to get this ball out in two and a half, 3 seconds, whatever it might be. The thing that I look at with the Bears, you know, the Bears have done a, they got a variety of guys. You know, there's, yeah, Montez Sweat, yes. Okay, we know that. But I mean, Taylor, I mean, I could get on the list. Dexter's becoming a threat. You know, now you got three, four guys,
yes,
five guys that, depending who's rotating in, you got to block them. You know, I don't know if one would be dominant, that we got to slide the protection to Montez Sweat, or we got to slide the protection to player X. You know, I don't know if there's the
Marcus Walker has got some sacks.
There's not the Aaron Donald where you sit down in my mind and say, how does our game plan start? Well, we better block him. If we don't block him, we won't win.
Right.
I don't think there's that going on, but I'll tell you what, the rest of this Bears defense has really stepped up from the standpoint that they've got a group of guys that are capable of getting to the quarterback depending on the matchup.
Caleb Williams effective again running the ball, but he also, four touchdown passes, showed accuracy that illustrated just how special his arm talent is, Dave. Continues to make strides. What do you think made him turn the corner so far?
You hit it right on the head there. The thing that I saw different in this game as compared to some of the earlier games, he made throws, inaccurate throws, into tight coverage for completions that he did not do earlier. You know, the third down throw to Keenan Allen over the middle. You throw that 6 inches to the right, 6 inches to the left, it's incomplete or intercepted, and he put it in the money. You know, the play that Keenan scored on, the touchdown, down the middle of the field in the end zone.
Back shoulder.
That was a very similar play to the one that Kmet scored on.
Yes.
And by that, I mean they lined up in kind of a bunch formation with guys together, and they ran a pick play to keep it simple.
Yes.
They, you know, one guy's in, one guy's out, one guy's down the middle. Okay. So they run it, and Kmet's wide open. Two guys covered one. They got him. They come back and run a similar play, okay, and guess what Jacksonville did? They zoned it off, which is smart. So now they pass everything off. You got outside, I got deep, I've got the inside. We would always, the minute we got a bunch formation, I don't care if I was in a blitz, I wasn't going to stay in the blitz because you're going to get picked. So we would go right away to a zone kick coverage, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so that's what they did. So if you drew that up, you'd probably say the throw is to the flat. It's not a great one, but hit Kmet out there in the flat, make 3 yards. The throw that he threw to Keenan down the middle of the field with a guy underneath him in the back of the end zone on the back shoulder, wow, that was fantastic. I mean, that was really an exceptional throw by Caleb. It really was. I had an appreciation. I ran that back and ran it back and said, this is, that would not be the first guy that you probably circled.
Is he getting better? Do you see that, Dave? I mean, we notice the numbers, and we see the problem is when you're trying to determine if it's the 31st or the 32nd passing defense he's against, is he getting better? It would seem so. Even I thought the design of the play, the touchdown play to the tight end was exceptional.
Yeah.
Where you fake the pass, no, you're going to run, and then boom.
Yeah, that's all on him. You know, any time that there's a successful screen type of play like that, it all comes back to the quarterback. The quarterback has to set it up. You know, in other words, if we're going to run a little tight end screen or whatever, if Caleb would have dropped right back and starts looking at Kmet from the very beginning, they would have covered him. But it was a great design, Molly, right? The lineman released both ways. He looks to the left. You know, he looks to the right. The linebackers, the whole middle of the field parts. And again, let's go back to this. That play is only a good play if the defense is going to be in a two deep where the safeties have to split. Right. If they're in a single high, that's not a good play. But in that area of the field, a lot of teams will run too deep. And it was really a lack of respect. They're saying, you know what? We're going to take away DJ Moore and your outside receivers, but we're going to give you the middle of the field. Go ahead, throw to Komet. And it was a great design play.
This segment that Dave Wansett is sponsored by ChicagoRoofingContractors.org, providing all-weather protection for your business. So what did you make of the revelation that the Bears did not start scripting the first 15 plays until the leadership committee led by Mercedes Lewis, including Caleb Williams, approached Shane Waldron after the Colts game?
Yeah, I did not realize that. And that kind of surprised me, you know, because I tell you what, I make one point, I'm coming right back to that. This was the most exciting thing other than the win for me. 29 runs, 29 passes. Yeah. You want to know why Caleb is being more efficient in his passing game?
Balance,
people. That's the key here in the NFL. Back to your question about scripting. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, my experience, you know, all the guys did it, and they would come up with the first three, four plays, not Saturday. They might come up with those plays Wednesday, saying we're going to start with this, and then we're the first third down, we're going to throw this, and the first third and long, we're going to throw this. And that quarterback would work on it every day, and he would be digesting it and digesting it and digesting it every way you could. And the offensive line knew, hey, if this guy blitzes, it's going to be 50 protection or it's going to be six, whatever. So, yeah, I was kind of surprised because it's a real comfort zone for your players knowing what you're going to do. You know, it's just like having a rundown here. You guys talk about here's the plan, this is what we're going to do on the show. It makes, when I come in here, it makes my job a lot easier knowing what to expect.
Well, I think that talking to Olin about it, he explained how he would take those plays and then he would go to work on his own and he would break down tape and try to figure out what they have done in those situations before, and then maybe he would have a conversation with the offensive line coach or with the coordinator about what that meant. And then by the time you got to the game, you know what you're expecting and what you're looking for. And then on the sideline, you're like, hey, they're not doing this. Have you noticed they're doing this? And that allows you to adjust and get different plays in as well.
And for players who believe in visualization, as Kurt Warner elaborated, the playoff.
What did he say? He liked it?
Oh, he liked it because Mike Martz told him during a playoff game, this is what we're going to run, and he started rehearsing it in his mind and going through all the scenarios on Friday through Saturday, and then he opened up the game with like a 75-yard touchdown pass to Isaac Bruce, I think it was the story. So it was something that I think caught a lot of people off guard. It might be a matter of semantics. Mm-hmm. Lucy came back and talked about openers and things that they were generally ready for. It just is interesting that we know as much as we know, thanks to the Mercedes Lewis news service.
The big dog. big dog was barking.
Absolutely. No, that's good. And, you know, we won the penalties. We won the run game, the turnovers. I mean, all the things that people don't talk about.
They had two penalties. They had a penalty before the game started, for God's sake.
Pre-kickoff.
And they wound up with two for 10 yards.
That gives you a chance. Why is the penalty so good? Is because it doesn't put your quarterback in a bind, you know? I mean, right away you're thinking you're going to have a third down and three, and now it's third down and seven. That's a completely different call. And I'll tell you what, Caleb, you mentioned David Caleb running for, 50-some yards or whatever?
Oh, yeah, that was great.
That's another thing that if I'm defending the Bears right now, you got DJ Moore and you got the receivers. The run game, you know, a little bit. I mean, you know, I think they're using Swift better. Yeah. You notice they're not banging him up inside anymore. Yeah. It's more perimeter runs, which he is excellent at.
Read and react.
And then, but now there's the threat that if we don't have a penalty and it's third and 12, and it is third and five, now all of a sudden your quarterback is a threat to tuck that ball and run for the first down. That adds a whole nother stress level for defensive coordinators defending the Bears.
You ever lose your long snapper during the game?
I did not. I've lost kickers and warm-ups, but in fact, not the long snapper. And you know what? I wasn't worried about the extra points. The punts could be something that...
And they never had a punt.
If the ball's wet, if it's windy... But Wes Welker, I'll give you a stat. I think he was the
emergency kicker.
He was our receiver. We signed him. Rick Spielman, we signed him. He was Olindo Mari was our kicker, and he got hurt some damn how. I still don't know how. I couldn't get a straight answer, but he got hurt in warmups. And so I called the team up and I says, can anybody here kick? This was like before the opening kickoff. And Wes Welker put his hand up, and who's now coaching for the Dolphins, by the way, and said, Coach, I can kick. I says, you're the kicker. Let's go get him, get him set up. So he kicked off. He kicked an extra point. I think he kicked a field goal in the game.
Yeah, he was an emergency kicker in his career. So Olin said something really stayed with me. He said that at one point, they were trying to run a cadence to get the opponent to jump off sides. And he loved the fact it didn't work. Everybody knew he was running a cadence to get him off sides. But he loved the fact that cadence had been one of the things we were talking about with him, that he hadn't done it and he had to develop it. And he was out there selling it. And he goes up to the line and then he's selling it again. And it didn't work, obviously.
Right.
But the idea that he's trying and that he's committed enough to try to sell something that was considered a weakness of his just talks to maybe the little elements, maturity. The tiny things that you need someone to work on, the commitment that the player has to being great.
Yeah, and I would say this, too. It's just like running a punt. We would want to run a fake punt early because now you knew that the early in the season or even the preseason, so that the opponent knew you'd do it and knew you had it. You know, we do the hard count. I guarantee you now we get in that situation that defensive guys now are saying, hey, Caleb, they got the hard count. Sit in there. So by doing that, even though it didn't work.
You might buy yourself a little something just down the line.
Piggyback what Olin's saying. Yeah. I mean, it's there's more to it. You know, there's some advantages to showing that you have it, even though it didn't work.
So you're the head coach of a 4-2 team going into a bye week, riding a 3-game winning streak. You've got momentum. You want to keep it alive. What's your approach this off week? What do you have to get done from the head coach's perspective?
You'd be running inside run drill.
I'd say somehow we're going to run 36 power. I don't know, you know, who wants to do it, but we're going to run it. So, Olin, get ready. Let's go. You know what? I would look at it and look at situations. The Bears were 4-for-4 in the red zone, you know, but there's been times they struggled. You know, what do we really situation-wise need to work on? I mean, they were okay in third down. What were they third down? I was looking at that this morning. I mean, we were, 5-for-11? That was very good, obviously 45%. You know, is it third down? The point I'm trying to make is it third and long? Is it third and short? I would go through with myself, Scott, and look at everything situation-wise, and I wouldn't worry about big picture running team plays, you know, against Washington right now. I would pull out three, four situations on offense and defense and say, you know what, we're going to have a couple good periods of this because this is the focus, and put it on the board and show the guys. You know, right now, guys, our red zone stuff, we're in the bottom half of the league. As an example, we might be, I don't know what the stats are, or you know, third down and long, or third, whatever it is. And we need to improve these areas. That's going to be the focus this week. And the players will buy into that because they'll see it on the board, black and white. Here it is. Oh, boy, yeah, I thought we were better than that, Coach. No, we're really not. That's our focus, and let's get something done this week and get better.
Great stuff. Coach, thank you. A lot of fun. Really appreciate
it. Great to see you, Dave.
All right, guys.
That is Coach Wonstadt. You're listening to Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score.
Can you give us any clarity on Kyler Gordon's injury situation?
Yeah, so he's getting image done this morning. So we don't have that back yet. So we don't know the severity of that. So we'll figure that out as we go. But we're hopeful. You know, it's we're fortunate that the bye week is here and we have some extra time. And that's no different with Brisker. You know, Brisker's dealing with that concussion still. We'll see where that is later today. Daly, we're getting his image done right now. So we'll see where that long snapper is as well. So and Tyreek. And then Tyreek's also another guy that we're looking at and we're hopeful for. Because we have the bye week, we have some time and we hope those guys heal and get the rehab they need to get back in there as soon as possible.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Look, I wish there was more clarity because it's convenient in a way for the Bears to meet with the media only on Monday and tell you, well, the guy's getting an MRI.
Exactly, yeah.
I mean,
it is the bye-bye week.
Could you tell us?
Maybe bye-bye.
Could you maybe make an announcement tomorrow?
No, about you couldn't. They're not going to do that, Molly. You
and
know.
They don't have an injury Dr. report
Eberflus
this week.
Dr. Eberflus is on vacation.
We will find out probably on Wednesday. I mean, they may tell you on Monday, oh, yeah, you know, well, we're going to see what happens. They, you know, it's Secret Squirrel dating Morocco Mole.
They also
you
have
don't
time.
Want any information.
They
ever
also
really
have the benefit of time.
I know.
And this week it is Hallis Hall Pool and Spa, a recovery place. You want to go there to rest, relax, and recover. Guys need it. The injuries are mounting. You don't want your secondary to be compromised. You hope you get all three guys back for the next game against Washington. You're going to need them against Jaden Daniels. But is that unrealistic? Brisker, we don't know about concussions. Kyler Gordon, hamstrings are difficult to figure out. Tyreek Stevenson, a calf injury. You would think of the three, he'd be the most predictable. If it's not serious, maybe he is the one that you can count on. But we don't know. They're getting imaging. Take your time.
I hate the idea that he was in a walking boat. I understand it's just precautionary. Yeah. The guy couldn't play, so if he's going to be on his feet, he's going to be
in London.
I doubt
he's kept it on the flight.
Well, but he kept it on the sidelines.
Yeah,
I also, I'm just saying, it's a bad visual. I also, Bigsy told us this morning that that Scott Daly might not be as bad as originally
That's
feared.
Good. That's good for Cole Kmet.
It's good for Cole Kmet.
It's good for everybody.
Well, they do need, though, to make sure if there are kickers on, or excuse me, long snappers on the street, they can bring them in and look at them and maybe have them on call.
Practice squad.
Make sure
Elevate
they know
on Saturday.
If there is, because as we've said before, you got Patrick Scales coming off of back surgery.
Yikes.
And he's probably 3 weeks away.
That's minor surgery.
Yeah, because it's on him.
It's somebody else's.
I gotcha. There you go.
I got a question for you. I don't know if this is under the category of wild and crazy questions, far-fetched ideas perhaps, but it was related to a news item this morning.
Yes.
Across the National Football League.
Yes.
The Athletic is reporting that the Jets have given Hassan Reddick and his representatives a short window to seek a trade, according to Diana Russini.
Yes.
His new representation, Drew Rosenhaus, has been reaching out to teams over the last 12 hours to gauge interest. Is he calling Ryan Poles? And if he does, what does Poles say? Hassan Reddick.
Listen.
One of the worst holdouts ever.
I understand how bad the holdout is. I understand he wants to get paid. I understand that he rejected a chance to sign a one-year deal.
Yes,
and
all true.
All that happened. So if Drew Rosenhaus is calling, I'm taking the call.
Okay.
I'm finding out exactly what he wants and how much he needs. And I want to know exactly what it would cost me to make a trade with the Jets. But if you're asking me if I believe he's a better player than they have opposite Montez
Sweat, that's
not
what I'm asking. But
then I'm going to tell you that he is indeed an excellent football player.
Is he
a problem child? And
yes.
Do you have to resolve? I would
Check.
Say you have to resolve all the contract stuff. Could he come in here and could he cause problems? Okay, fair enough.
Fair enough.
But I really, really think it's a top-level talent. And again, I don't know what condition he's in. I don't know if he's been working out.
I've got to follow up.
I'm sure you do. And I would unquestionably make a move for that guy if indeed I felt it made me a better football team, and I think it would make him a better football team.
Mr. Poles.
Again, it's a short-term deal.
Yes.
And I don't want to give up much.
Is your bigger concern the cost or the size of the contract or the draft capital you would have to give up to get Hassan Reddick in a Bears
uniform? I could care less about the contract or the length of it or the amount of it.
You don't care about the size of it?
Well,
you don't care about the money? It's only money?
I mean, for a year or 2 years, I'd be all over it.
Okay.
I would bring him in. I want to know about his fitness level. I want to make a couple phone calls on the guy. That guy was a great player in the NFL. I mean,
he's a difference maker.
He's a multiplier.
He's a multiplier.
He might be better than Montez Sweat.
As far as an edge rusher, he probably is.
Yes.
Montez Sweat is probably a better all around against the run and rushing the passer, but Haason Reddick is a game wrecker.
Would I want a game wrecker on my team? Would I want to be a better football team? Unequivocally. Not only that, I'll go this far. If I had a chance to get Devontae Adams, I'd take him too.
No, you I'll would not. Him. Now you're getting silly.
I don't
now
care how many receivers
away.
I
now,
have.
Now you're getting carried
bring
away.
Bring them all in.
No.
Bring them all into
I'm
my heart.
I'm not asking about receivers.
Who
I don't
else
want
you got
a diva.
Out there?
I don't want a diva.
Who else is out there?
Come on.
You got a tackle somewhere that is on a team that's going to hell. Give them to me. I'll take them.
This isn't wildly unrealistic.
I'm taking everyone. You want to swap quarterbacks? Okay, it's early in the season.
All right, stop it. Now you're being facetious.
I am. I've been being facetious.
Why? Because Haason Reddick is on the trade market. I don't know if it's realistic for the Bears.
I don't think there's any way the Bears are going to make that move. Would I unequivocally?
Well, if you're the Bears, do you get in those conversations?
I think
Detroit Lions likely are at the front of the line.
You have to take that phone call. Hey, if they replace Hutchinson with Haason Reddick, they're right back.
I don't know
what
they have to give up. I don't know what the cap situation is. I have to look that up. But
well, they've been paying everybody all.
I mean, they
gave the tackle money. They just gave the running back money. They're giving everybody a new contract.
They're closer to a Super Bowl than the Bears are. They're closer to the Super Bowl than many teams are.
Yes.
And Haason Reddick replacing Aiden Hutchinson would keep them on that Super Bowl path, one would think. So that's something to consider. I don't know where it's going. I just think it's fun to ask the question because when you talk about – I don't think the Devontae Adams thing makes any sense. And if I were Ryan Poles and Vegas's GM called me, I'd hang up because I don't want any part of that conversation.
You're already paying enough receivers?
Yes. You got three. We made big deal about all three of them, and you're paying through the nose. I don't think you got a $23 million investment this year in Keenan Allen.
If I have money sitting around and I can get better, I'm getting better.
I'm not getting Devontae Adams better.
I'll take him. I'll take him for the rest of the year.
That's crazy.
Thank you.
That's crazy.
I want to get better. I want to get better.
I would want to get an offensive lineman if one's on the market. By the way, there was a trade in the NFL yesterday. Did you see former Bear Roy Robertson-Harris
jumped on
a flight 10 hours from London, just played the Bears. He's going to Seattle. The Seahawks make a deal for the defensive tackle.
Didn't he have a sack in that game?
He might have had a sack.
It may have been that Justin kind of ran forward and was tackled before he hit the line of scrimmage. There were a couple of those in that game.
Williams got sacked by running toward him. Yeah. So Roy Robertson-Harris goes from the Jaguars to the Seahawks 3 weeks before the trade deadline. We'll see if the Bears are active or not. But this Haason Reddick news made me wonder if you thought that was
You know, how about this,
conceivable?
David? How about you make a deal just to block Detroit from getting him?
Well, I wondered that too because you're in the midst of a race. In the division, you have four teams with at least four victories.
Maybe they claim Dominic Robinson.
I don't think that would move the needle.
Make it a joke.
By the way, I have some information on the hotels that we have been talking about. The Bears English Countryside Manor, which was such a first-class operation.
Marriott.
So apparently, the Bears were there, and I'm sure that they enjoyed themselves. It seemed like it worked to their favor, but they apparently didn't like the designation there. They tried to get into the other hotel. This was the second choice of the hotels in London. And Jacksonville got the first choice. They chose the better hotel, which was downtown. And apparently team personnel, Kevin Warren, had talked to the NFL about switching hotels.
Because Jacksonville wasn't coming in.
And, well, no, not because of that.
I'm joking.
Before that happened. They wanted to be closer probably to the city, maybe turn out to be a blessing in disguise. They got the second hotel.
They were an hour
north of the city, and all's well that ends well.
They won. So they had the right hotel.
They had the right hotel. It felt like training camp.
Yes.
It didn't feel like a trip to, the middle of some urban district.
It felt like training camp because they were away and they had a field near them. There's nothing... They had a walkthrough on Wednesday, and they barely practiced. I mean, come on. It didn't feel like training camp. Although I suppose
training camp because they were all in the same under the same roof.
Training camp no longer is run the way it used to be.
No, but it didn't feel like Dallas
Hall.
You know
what he meant.
God, you must be very
literal. I'm trying to trade for Hassan Reddick this morning.
Jeez, I know. No, you're not. You're trying to make fun of that idea.
No, I'm all over it.
I think that the Bears are not going to trade for Hassan Reddick.
Oh, I know they're not going to trade for him, and I know they're probably afraid.
Who's going to get him?
Well, I mean, that's the problem, isn't it?
What's the problem? I want to know who's going to get
him. If he winds up with the best team in your division, which might be the Vikings, but probably is Detroit in terms of what they did a year ago.
Who else is going to have
pretty bad.
Have the wherewithal or interest to go after a Hassan Reddick and to have those conversations with Drew Rosenhaus?
Philadelphia?
Possibly.
Before they fire their coach? I got to tell you, you know, honestly, I've been thinking about this because Doug Peterson had a terrible game, and obviously they came out and said they were quitting on him and all that stuff. Andre Sisco said he thought players had quit. When a coach is fired, and we saw Robert Saleh fired by the Jets, and the Jets, what happened yesterday, didn't exactly turn it around.
That wasn't exactly a great move.
Who did they fire now?
We didn't get the fired coach bounce.
No bounce at all. I'm just wondering, when that happens, isn't the next guy more likely to be fired? When you fire a coach as early as this happened, it is still October, and you already got one guy on the street.
Yeah.
Does that mean that another coach is likely to be fired?
If somebody's as dumb as Woody Johnson
loses.
I don't think one bad decision presages another.
Loses another game. I think it's almost permission to some of these wacky owners.
It might be, but they're wacky owners.
I don't
think that's the right move. This isn't baseball. You don't really – I don't know how much you benefit from changing a coach mid-season or early in the season as you do in other sports.
But there are teams, and Nick Sirianni is a guy that is on the firing line. I think there are teams with coaches on the firing line – and if you see somebody make a change, it makes it easier for you to make a change.
Well, it might, but then you're just as short-sighted and impulsive as the guy that set the stage for you to make your dumb move. I don't think that the Jets firing Robert Saleh was smart. I don't think last night any referendum on that being a smart or a good or a bad move.
They couldn't fire the quarterback, so what were they going to do?
They were going to hold serve. They were going to stay the course. They were going to try to do what football teams do in bad divisions. And that AFC East this year is a bad division.
I'm trading for Hassan Reddick. I'm going to make the call.
You're not.
Myself.
You didn't take that seriously.
Dustin.
And you know what? It was a good thought exercise.
Bring him on.
Yeah. Well, ask Florio what he thinks.
We'll cut the deal right now. We'll bring in Mike Florio next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, NBC Sports, Twitter.com/ProFootballTalk.
Day by day.
We get better and better.
We get better.
NFL insider Mike Florio with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. We love our opportunity to talk to Mike Florio. He joins us now on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, Aturo.com. Michael, good morning. How are you?
How's it going?
Doing well.
We're doing well. Curious about this Hassan Reddick story. Apparently he's being shopped. Drew Rosenhaus has been given a 24-hour period to try to trade him. He's calling everyone. I would imagine Detroit would be interested. I don't know what their financial situation is. I don't know what he's looking for. I don't know that the Jets know. I thought that the Jets made that trade with missing some information, and no one wants to do the same thing. But what is your take on that situation?
You definitely don't want to trade a guy who wants a new contract without giving him the new contract on the way through the door, because if you give up the trade compensation and he still doesn't have a new contract, he's got all the leverage, which we've seen. Now, look, it's cost him some money. A lot of money in fines and lost salary, but the Jets surely didn't see this coming or they wouldn't have made the trade. I think one of the good reasons for doing this is to let Reddick see what else is out there, or more accurately, what else is not out there. That can go a long way toward, you know, we know what's behind door number two. It's not great. Let's focus on door number one. Let's get a deal done with the Jets. The 49ers thought when they gave Brandon Ayuk permission in March to do that, he'd find out there isn't anyone out there that was willing to pay what he wanted. They found out otherwise. So I think that's part of the ploy here. Let Reddick see that there's nothing out there close to or equal than what the Jets are willing to do. And that might be the first step in breaking this logjam.
Lions have about $33 million under the cap, according to SpotRack. They also signed a defensive end, Isaiah Thomas, off the Bengals practice squad. They have a plan to replace Aiden Hutchinson, Mike, but I just wonder how bad will they miss him? Is their offense good enough to overcome that? Or are the Lions still the team to beat in that division?
It's the age-old question, next man up versus next man in. Do you go out and add someone? How difficult is it to add a pass rusher? For other positions, it's harder because it's more interdependent on other guys doing their jobs and understanding how they do their jobs. For a pass rusher, especially if he's going to be situational, you just go in there at the appropriate time, chase the quarterback. I think where this will hurt them is in the postseason when they come up against a team like maybe the 49ers, which has a very good offense and you need a strong pass rush to take the steam out of it. When you look around the division right now or the conference right now, I mean, really, who stands out? And the Lions Super Bowl odds actually got lower, went from 10 to 1 to 8.5 to 1 after that Cowboys game, even with the Hutchinson injury. So I think the Lions will be fine. Then there's the question of, will he be able to play in the Super Bowl if they make it? I'd rather he be safe and smart with his body and not rush back, but maybe he'll be ready to go if they make it to the Super Bowl.
Wow.
What was your take on Aaron Rodgers saying that there were too many penalties, including a roughing the passer call on him? There were 22 penalties called on Monday Night Football for 204 yards. And, I mean, the Jets have bigger issues, but that was kind of a waste of time.
I struggle when there are a lot of penalties with the question of whether or not the players are simply committing a lot of fouls or are the officials flag happy. Mm-hmm. You know, holding, there's holding on every play. If it's away from the point of attack, I don't want to see it called. Last night, the holding penalties that they showed were right where the opening was. The touchdown, Aaron Rodgers called it a phantom holding call. The touchdown by Braylon Allen came off the board. Tyron Smith held the defender to create the hole through which Braylon Allen ran. And you can see it. There was another hold on a screen pass they were setting up. The center was holding the guy who would have blown up the screen pass. So is it the players failing to follow the rules? Is it the officials being, as Marv Levy once said, hey, you over-officious jerk? Or is it a little bit of both? But Devin McCourty made this point on PFT Live. It was consistent last night, which if you're going to have a lot of penalties, at least it should even out instead of being skewed against one team.
Mike, did Woody Johnson making an impulsive move by firing Robert Saleh give license to Jerry Jones to do the same with Mike McCarthy?
I don't know if it sparks a feeding frenzy. Look, at the end of the day, Jerry Jones is cheap, and Jerry Jones doesn't want to pay anyone to not work for him. And that's why we've rarely seen a coach fired in the season. Typically, the coach is gone at the end of his contract. And I don't know, though. I mean, if he didn't do it yesterday, they're going into their bye week. If he didn't do it yesterday, when's he going to do it? They've been embarrassed at home three times this season. They've been behind 21-6, 28-6, and 27-6 in each of those three games. They do not play well from behind. They're falling into holes. The only good news for Cowboys fans is there's 4 weeks until the next home game, until you have to witness another debacle like this. And, you know, at best, they strike me as a team that maybe gets a seat at the playoff table and gets blown out either in the wild card round or the divisional round. And that's clearly not what the Cowboys are trying to do.
Mike, we'll let you go. I'm just wondering, when you see some of the results thus far, there are teams that seem without hope. Do you expect a lot of trades? Could Cleveland try to move some contracts? Do you think that's a possibility?
If I'm the Browns and I'm stuck with this ball and chain of a Deshaun Watson contract, I would trade every asset I have to stockpile draft picks for next year and the year after, because if you're going to have $92 million, $46 million a year tied up in one player, you build out your roster with young, cheap talent around. It's a disaster for the Browns. This is the worst contract we've seen, the worst trade we've seen in the salary cap era, where you give up three first-round picks, three other picks, $230 million fully guaranteed on a five-year deal. Think of how good they would have been last year with the team they had without him if they didn't have that dragging them down. Think of how good they'd be this year if they'd been able to bring back Joe Flacco, but they couldn't bring back Joe Flacco because all the fans in Cleveland would be demanding that Flacco play. So it's a mess. And other owners would say, that's what you get for doing a five-year fully guaranteed contract.
Great stuff, Mike. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks.
That is Mike Florio. You're listening to Mully and Haw on The Score.